Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. This is the Friday News Roundup. We will be looking at the news this week, which is a lot and very serious things going on between Iran and Israel and then the Trump trial. So stay with us and we'll be right back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Just to remind everybody, and for anybody new, Victor is with Martin and Neely Anderson, Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution, and the Wayne and Marcia Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. You can find him at his website, victorhanson.com. It's called The Blade of Perseus. Come join us there. Lots of his writing that is free, and then we have the Ultra material that you can subscribe to get, and it comes out three times a week, so lots of material there on the website. Victor, some very...
Before you start, Sammy, I just wanted to say that I've been drinking my Elevate hydrogen water.
Oh, yes.
And I feel great this morning doing it. And I don't know why. I'm not trying to just fabricate something, but I get maybe this friend, this wonderful couple sends these, and they should last, what, 2 weeks maybe? And I drink three a day.
Yeah. Well, so they're definitely the cleanest water I've ever tasted and the best that you have in here at your studio, so I enjoy drinking it as well.
Thank you.
I invite anybody to go to drinkelevate.com. That's drinkelevate.com for those, and get yourself some of the Elevate water. So, Victor, Israel, you and Jack talked about it, but you talked about it pre-attack by Iran. So I was wondering your reflections on that attack.
There was 310 missiles. The majority were drones and the slow-moving 110-mile-an-hour drones. They were all shot down. Remember, if you look at the map, they've got to go over largely Saudi and Jordanian airspace. So they had a good out. They had a really good exegesis. They said, you know what? We helped shoot them down, i.e. we're trying to reestablish that the United States is going to protect us from Iran. But we didn't do it to help Israel. We just have a problem with anybody that violates our airspace. So that was their excuse, and they did a pretty good job. And then Britain and the United States shot them all down. I think Israel might have shot some.
They said 99 of the 300.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So all that were coming in were cruise missiles. Those are like V1, World War II German missiles, buzz bombs, so to speak. And they had no problem shooting those down. And, you know, in World War II, the British had that Typhoon fighter that was capable of reaching 400 miles on a straight plane. It was comparable to the Mustang with the Rolls-Royce Merlin engine. It had a Merlin engine, as I recall. And they would go up to the buzz bomb and go under it and then rise up on the plane and flip it over by their wing touching that little stub wing.
Whoa, cool.
I know, and they didn't have to shoot it down and waste, you know, 20-millimeter cannon, or they didn't have to shoot it and then have the whole thing blow up right next to it, and then they would get into the detritus. So anyway, they got rid of those, and then they just had two or three types of ballistic missiles. From what I can tell, they were their latest ballistic missiles. And the tripartite David Sling Arrow and Iron Dome got rid of them at all different elevations. So 99% didn't get in, 300. And they were trying to swarm up. But here's what I don't understand. So Israel said they have to respond. They're probably going to wait till after Passover. And the Turks, you know, they, in a meeting of the Turkish parliament, they were yelling death to Israel the other day. So they're no friend of either the United States or Israel, but they had a Turkish intermediary who talked between the United States and and Iran. And what the media said was, I wrote it down. He said, Iran, this is the Turkish intermediary. Iran informed us in advance of what would happen. Possible developments also came up during the meeting with Secretary of State Blinken. And they, the U.S., conveyed to Iran through us that this reaction must be within certain limits. So my question is, what does certain limits mean?
Yeah.
Does it mean, okay, you will send them, they can send 300, I guess, when they said certain limits, it was interpreted as 300 and not 400 or 500.
I guess.
And maybe the Americans thought, well, 300, one dead Jewish guy, woman, child. So only 300 dead Jews, 400, 500. What was the limit they discussed? You
exactly.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you think about it, it's kind of like what he said to when asked about if Putin invaded Ukraine, it depended on whether it was a minor invasion. Why didn't he say, I guess what I'm trying to say is, why didn't he say something like this when the Turkish interlocutor said Iran wants to, you know, wants to talk, and what's your reaction to what they're going to do? What if he said, no matter how many rockets you choose to shoot at the Israeli homeland, they're going to knock down every one of them, and so are we. But, so that's what's going to happen if you do it. But if you just launch one, just one, given what you've done with Hezbollah and given what you did with Hamas and given that you planned the October 7th, if you just launch one, anything near the United States, but Israel will respond by an overwhelming series of strikes. And unlike the strike that you're thinking that we're going to help knock down, you won't be able to knock this one down. So don't try. Why didn't they just say that?
Yeah.
Because he's destroying deterrence. And what he's doing is he's making affirmative action warfare. In other words, he Biden and Blinken and Jake Sullivan look at the Middle East and they say, well, the world sees Israel as the oppressor, victimizer, and is the Palestinians dash Iran dash Hezbollah. They're not white. They're not Western. They're not colonial powers, they're the oppressed and the victimized, even though they have much more population in the Middle East, 500 million Muslims to 12 million, 11 million Israelis. But what they do is they try to balance it out. It's almost like the missiles are SAT scores.
Yeah.
Well, Israel's got the bomb and the better missiles, but we think that we have to have disparate impact or proportional representation or equity. So we're going to tell Israel, you know, just clamp it down, and then the Iranians get to have 300 rockets that come back at you. And it's like we're trying to build up the Iranians almost, because it's unfair that Israel has these amazing abilities to defend itself. And so we are telling them in Gaza, don't go in there and do all that. And you want to say, well, wait a minute. They killed 1,200 Jews and they didn't stop because they thought, that was our limit, 1,200. They stopped because the IDF was coming, or they would have killed everyone they could have. And from the moment of October 7th to October 27th, 20 days, and what they had done before in rocketry toward Israel, they sent 7,000 rockets. If they had just killed one Israeli, that would be 7,000 dead. Mm. It wasn't because they didn't want to kill them. It's because they were incompetent. But Biden didn't say that at all. He didn't say anything about it when he's telling them not to go in Gaza. So he's almost like saying, well, Israel, you have two high SAT scores and you've got straight A averages. So we're not going to let you into Harvard because these guys are oppressed peoples. So we're going to say that they get special consideration. And they're managing the war as a university manages their admissions. It's not meritocratic. They don't say, okay, you started it, go to it. May the best person win. They don't do that. And you can see it again. If you remember when they hit the hospital in mid-October, and Biden, everybody got angry. Israel kills children. They bombed a Gaza hospital. Then they thought, wasn't a bomb. The crater came from a missile. We picked up telephonic conversations, and they were saying, oh, basically, we blew it. An Islamic Jihad rocket hit it. So what did Joe Biden, he was all miffed. He had to go there and talk to people. Remember they interviewed him on the plane, and he said, well, it just goes back to the old adage, you got to shoot straight. So he's basically saying, if Islamic Jihad had have shot the missile correctly and not incorrectly because they're incompetent, it would not have hit their own hospital. It would have hit where it should have, Jewish Israel. And apparently if it had killed, blown up a hospital in Israel, what would he have said? Well, they shot straight. So I don't think we can really appreciate the depravity of this administration. Because basically they are running this war with the idea that Hamas or Hezbollah or Iran has to catch up because Israel's killed too many of their people in Gaza, maybe 11,000 Hamas people. Yeah. So Iran gets a right to shoot 300. That's the limit. And Gaza gets to shoot 7,000. And the Houthis get to keep hitting Americans and Americans because they're incompetent. They kill a few here, that's collateral damage, that's acceptable damage. Because they're oppressed, they're incompetent, we have all the power. And it's just so sick because the laws of war don't take any consideration of what we say. They're immutable, they're timeless. And they say the degree to which you can be disproportionate, inflict punishment on the enemy in a cost-benefit analysis, that results in deterrence.
Yeah.
So if Israel had said, you shoot one, given that you're behind everything in the Middle East, you're the ones that are going after the Americans, you're the ones that are supplying the Houthis to kill people, you're the ones that shut down the Red Sea, you're the ones that gave Hamas all of these rockets that attack us, you're the ones that planned October 7th, you gave over 150,000 rockets to Hezbollah, you're the one that destroyed Lebanon, you're the one in the Iraq war that gave shaped charges and killed hundreds of Americans. Given all that, you're lucky we don't get rid of you. So, if you send any rockets, any, Israel's going to retaliate. And if you touch one American, we are going to retaliate. And by the way, you've had American hostages too long. You better give them back in 5 days. We wouldn't have the war. So, the way we're going now, Israel's going to have to retaliate. It's going to be overwhelming. Then Iran is going to come back and back and back and back. And it didn't have to be this way.
Yeah.
He caused this war, Joe Biden.
Yeah.
By doing two things. He was weak after Afghanistan, the Chinese balloon, you name it. Chinese taking advantage of us in the South China Sea, bullying Taiwan. And two, he either is afraid of a theater-wide war that will disrupt oil before the election, or he has so many Obama people working for him. And Michelle and Barack, who hate Israel, are saying, you know, we have this vision, as I keep saying, the Shia crescent of Tehran, Damascus, Beirut, Gaza. And we've got to bolster and prop up that group because they have a lot of immigrant influence in the West, Europe, and the United States, and they represent what we believe in. They are the version of minorities in the United States, and Israel is the version of the police and the establishment. And that's why they call them white settlers and colonialist and imperialist.
Yeah.
The children who came from the Holocaust.
Yeah.
That's what they call them. And that's what Barack Obama superimposes his sick idea of what America's about as he's a billion, he's a multimillionaire on his way to being a billionaire, but yet he hates what he sees as the oppressive white establishment. And he projects that onto Israel, and then he projects his community organizing days, his Bill Ayer days, onto the Palestinians and Iran, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, remember Donald Trump said that there was an attack by Iran in Iraq, on a U.S. because they said they had
to retaliate. Yes, that was a retaliatory strike.
And it seemed like a bit of theater. The Iranians were allowed. Well, this has the same feel to it.
Except
the drones came in, lit up, so they were easy to track and take down. So maybe the Iranians are saying, hey, Israel, we made it easy for you guys to take things out here. So that's our part.
And I don't think that you can say sending 200 cruise missiles, maybe the drones, but I think it's more apt, they were saying to the Turks, we're going to send a lot of it. This isn't 10 or 20. This is a huge attack. And the drones, and that's just the engine. These things only go 120 miles an hour. And they wanted to do it at night, and a drone is much more visible. But that fire is the engine. And my point is that the idea is to send this cloud of drones, and that occupies your defenses. And they didn't know what, they didn't expect the United States or Jordan or Saudi Arabia or the British to shoot them down. So the point was they would have come in low, and then the Israelis would have a big problem, because if you're shooting those planes down, why, higher up on two levels, you've got cruise missiles and ballistic missiles coming in, and you've got Iron Dome and the Arrow and David Sling anti-missiles operating all at the same time in Israeli airspace, well, then you can't have Israeli jets in the middle of all that trying to shoot down drones. So they have to go way out over Jordan and shoot them down. And that's not guaranteed you're going to shoot them all down.
Yeah.
So they were trying to do that. You're right that they notified the Turks in advance to say, we could do a lot more than this, but we're not. I don't know if that's true or not. But there's a big difference between Trump, and the left is really pointing that out today and yesterday. And all they're saying, well, Trump did the same thing, and he didn't reply. When Trump killed Soleimani and took him out, first of all, it was not over. It was in Iraq, where the United States had a presence. So they called up and said, we're going to respond. And Trump said, as I understand it, and what has been reported to me by people who knew of it, and it was in the media, okay, you kill one American and you're going to regret it. So they said, well, we're going to send rockets toward U.S. installations, but they're not going to kill anybody. And they didn't. Although I think it was a bad idea to tell them,
it's okay to do this.
Yes, because there was some traumatic injuries. So if you talk to people who are very knowledgeable, like H.R. McMaster, whom I have a great deal of respect for, he pointed that out to a lot of people, that there was traumatic brain injuries for a while for people from the concussions. But the point was, they knew that if they killed one person, they were going to be in big trouble. So my point is, when they went to the Turks and did the same thing, saying we're going to retaliate, but we're going to do it within limits. We didn't say, as Trump said, you kill one American, you hit anybody that gets hurt, we're going to destroy you. They didn't say that at all.
Yeah.
They said it's within limits. So you know that if those 300 missiles and rockets and cruise missiles and rockets and drones had killed 100 Jewish citizens, I don't think we would have done anything differently than we're doing now. That would be considered within limits.
Didn't Vietnam show us that a limited war is just an extended one?
I'm not saying every war can be decisive, but unless the enemy is defeated, it's what they call a bellum interruptum. So World War I, well, we defeated the Germans. Not really. The Germans surrendered 70 miles into Belgium and France on the 11th month. And so they went back to Germany, and Versailles didn't happen until the next June. And we were all gone. 70% of the troops were gone. And what were the Germans saying? Well, on the 11th month and the 11th day and the 11th hour, Armistice Day, an armistice, not an unconditional surrender. The Germans were saying, we're beat, we're exhausted. You've got 2 million Americans that have come, and they're going to go on to Berlin. We just quit. General Joffe said, this is not an armistice. This is just a pause for 20 years till they do it again. He was brilliantly prescient. So my point is, that's what caused World War II. It was not decisive. And that's why we have these bella interrupta all over the Middle East, because Israel is never allowed to ensure that they don't have the ability to make war upon them. And it's going to go on and on. I'm not saying every war has to be an unconditional surrender, but when you have a war and the enemy is not defeated and humiliated, and in a cost-to-benefit analysis does not learn that it was a disaster, then it's going to happen again. And especially if you cannot reformulate the enemy's government. That's what got into George Bush's head with nation building. He was wrong that it was possible to do in Iraq, but he was right that historically, if you can defeat the enemy and then you can recombobulate the political forces in the country and have some kind of government that resembles yours. And he tried in Iraq. And maybe he was successful because, after all, Iraq is not attacking anybody. And it's not like Afghanistan. So, yeah, these wars are going to keep going on until Israel, if they attack Israel again, we should just say, go to it. That was what was so tragic about Gaza. 90% of the war was over. And we believed all of these crazy statistics, the Gazans. And now we know we're learning that the Gazans, when they gave the demographic breakdown, men, women, children, elderly, that was so askew that even statisticians who were not pro-Israeli said, this is not accurate. So it's not 30,000. It's more like 20,000. In other words, it's probably 11,000 to 12,000 Hamas to 11,000 to 12,000 civilians. Mm-hmm. Not way up there in the 30s. But my point is, had they been allowed to destroy Hamas, then everybody would have looked at Hamas as the Germans looked at Hitler 1945, or how they looked at the Nazis in 1946. They didn't say, wow, I just discovered that National Socialism was really a mean movement. I didn't know that. Do you really believe that had in 1941, had Hitler gone all the way to Moscow successfully, and Army Group South had gone into the Caucasus and reached the Caspian Sea and had the oil, and Japan had taken India as was planned and Burma and got all of China, and we were isolated and not able to do anything about it? So by 1946, all of Europe and Britain were German. Do you think the German people would have acted the same way they did in 1946 after we won? They would have said, well, Hitler, he took Moscow and he took all of Russia, and our friends the Chinese, they took all of China and Burma and India. We've got the whole world. But now we've decided that we were fooled. And Nazism, there was an Auschwitz. We didn't know about it. So we're going to march on Berlin and get rid of him. I don't think so.
No.
It's like, we don't like Hitler because we're Oakland Raider fans and they're 0-12 this year. But last year when they were 12-0, we thought the Oakland Raiders were great. And that's how people, human nature, are.
Yeah.
So if they destroyed Hamas, forget all the rhetoric on campuses and all what they say. Just if the Israelis said, okay, there's no more Hamas now, and here's your country, and you can do whatever the blank you want with it. You can get Saudi money. You can get the UN. We're going to build a huge security wall around it. And whether we give you water from our desalination plants or power from our grid, we'll think about it. And you can go into Egypt if you want to get out. But they would change their attitude. They would look at Hamas and say, you did this to us.
Yeah.
But now they're going to say, wow, you killed 1,200 Jews and you survived. You know, Allah Akbar, great. And that's what's tragic, because it's going to go on now and on, unless they go back in there and destroy Hamas. And we know they're going to hit, they're going to have to hit Iran. Because if they don't, they've established two precedents in this war. One, they've told the world you can come into Israel during a festival and a religious holiday and rape and mutilate and behead and cook infants. And you can do it, 1,200 of them, and still survive as a political military organization. And two, you can send 300 missiles and drones into our homeland, and we're not going to do anything about it. We're just going to knock them down. And then you can brag to the world that you are the only country in history to shoot missiles that were effective into, I mean, Saddam Hussein did it in the first Gulf War.
No, you can't let either of those things stand.
And I would make a further proposition. It was a big mistake of the United States in 1991 when Saddam was so desperate and he went out in the desert and he launched those portable Scuds into Israel from Iraq. And he did a lot of, I mean, he didn't kill a lot of people, but he did a lot of damage. At least it was on TV. It was paramount. And George H.W. Bush, don't you dare reply back, because you'll disrupt the Arab coalition. I don't think they would have disrupted it, but they established a precedent then that under certain circumstances, you can attack Israel and get away with it.
Yeah. Well, Victor, let's go ahead and take a break and then come back and talk a little bit about the Trump trials. Stay with us. We'll be back.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, you and I know that ask whether you preferred stewed or grilled meat. Grilled takes the day anytime. Barbecue, yum. Just hearing the word makes your mouth water. You may already have a low temperature, slow cooking smoker, egg, or pellet barbecue, but in the middle of a busy week, who has that kind of time? You need a hot, fast solar infrared gas grill. It heats up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even on cold winter nights. That heat locks in juices and flavor and grills food faster. In just a few minutes, your family will be sitting at the table, enjoying better than restaurant quality grilled food, juicy steaks, moist chicken, tender fish, and healthy grilled vegetables. Solar is a multi-generational veteran-owned business. Their portable carts and built-ins are all made in the USA from commercial-grade stainless steel, so they're built to last. Get your free guide, How to Choose the Right Infrared Grill, at besthotgrills.com. That's besthotgrills.com, solar infrared gas grills for fast, delicious grilled food every day. That's besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com. And we'd like to thank our sponsor, Solar Infrared Gas Grills. And we're on to the Trump trials. Well, there's lots going on. Gag order on Donald Trump for talking about the, especially the judge whose daughter is working with a lot of people that are against Trump, and jury selections going on. So I was wondering your thoughts on these things.
Well, there's been rumors that a lot of people are trying to get into the jury pool for particular preordained reasons. But I looked at these jury people, and there's an I don't know how much of the population are lawyers, maybe 1%. But there's going to be more than one lawyer on those 12 jurymen. I don't think they're going to find a Honduran taxicab driver and a Mexican-American vendor and a Utah Mormon. In other words, the jury is not going to look like America. And this is very ironic because Joy Reid is on MSNBC saying, this is really good. It shows you what people of color and non-white America can do. And it's so ironic because Trump is this inveterate racism, and now he has to plead and beg for his career and his life because to people of color. It's just completely wrong what she said. Number one, she's a member of the DEI industry that says all juries must be proportionally representative. So if this is a, let's just take a hypothetical. Let's just say that Eric Adams, right, who's now under investigation for campaign finance fraud and a whole bunch of corruption issues, let's say that he has a change of venue and he's going to be tried in Wyoming. And there's going to be a white cattle rancher, and there's going to be a white hardware store owner, and there's going to be a white gun owner, and there's going to be a woman who runs a bed and breakfast out in the rural areas of Wyoming, and maybe, I don't know, there'll be four or five miners and farmers. Do you think that's a fair trial? No. They're going to convict him in 2 seconds. In fact, I'm being unfair to the people of Wyoming, many of whom I know and respect. They would be 10 times more likely to acquit him than this jury would be to acquit Trump. So he has zero chance.
I know.
Except if they what they need on that jury is somebody who actually is self-employed and works and knows how dangerous it is to be on the street of New York, and how little people care about their safety, and how hard it is to make a living. And lawyers are not that type of people, and young techies that work for Disney are not that kind of people. So it's not a fair jury. And he needs just one honest person to look at this bizarre case and say, wait a minute. You're trying to tell me that Donald Trump, if he had sexual relations with Stormy Daniels, wasn't afraid what it would mean to Ivanka and Eric and Don and Melania? Of course he tried to hide it, if it was true. And even if it wasn't true, even if she said, I claim that you did that. Well, he would react the way that Joe Biden did when Tara Reid did that. He didn't have the whole institutional support. They just crushed Tara Reid. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, she's lying. She's a slut. Oh, they don't have that ability. The right does, as the left does, to demonize and destroy women. And who would want to do it anyway, like they did?
Yeah.
They drove Tara Reid almost insane. So my point is, it was natural that he would try to hide it. And so if he did have a non-disclosure form number one, 2016, it's past the statute of limitation. Oh, wait a minute. There was COVID, so he's going to have a special bill of attainder, just like E. Jean Carroll did when suddenly they told her, you can't file a sexual harassment assault charge. It's way beyond the statute of limitations. Even if you could remember the date, which you can't, 95, 90. Oh, wait a minute. We just passed a Trump bill in the New York legislature. It says that just this year, if you want to file sexual assault charges against Donald Trump, you can for 1 year, no matter how long ago it happened. Now, they didn't call it that. And other people were welcome to take advantage. But it was a bill of attainder aimed at Donald Trump. And this bill that said, oh, by the way, the statute of limitations don't apply on the nondisclosure form because of COVID. And so then they said, and it's not to protect his family. It is a campaign expenditure. But that's a federal offense. And the feds looked at it and said, if we prosecute Hillary, we didn't prosecute Hillary, and she hired a foreign national, which is a felony, to work on a campaign and hid her money through Fusion GPS and Perkins Coie and the DNC and had this guy going around the country lying and making up all this stuff about a P-tape. And then they said, and then there was Obama who was getting foreign money. And we had, so we fined Obama $300,000 and we fined Hillary $100,000. Because they were misdemeanors. So we're not going to go after Donald Trump. This is a joke compared to what Obama's. And so Alvin Bragg came in and said, oh, every Soros-funded attorney who's running for office gets a lot of play from the national media if you say you're going to run to get Donald Trump. Fannie Willis, Letita, I'm going to do that. So he says, I prosecuted him 50 times, 100. Make me the DA of Manhattan and I'll go after Donald Trump. And the feds go, there's no case there. He goes, well, I'm going to say it's a state argument because he on the state, the state nondisclosure, he doctored a form. And so that was a campaign contribution and he broke a state law. That's what he did. He took a felony criminal exposure and he said he broke a state law in my jurisdiction because the money he gave Stormy was a campaign donation. Yeah. It's just such a joke.
It is. But it seems to be having effect on the polls because the Real Clear Politics average, and this was a couple of days ago, but was Biden at 45.4 and Trump at 45.6. So how do you think this is going to affect the campaign?
Well, I've been criticized because when DeSantis was running against Trump, I said that this was going to give Trump an edge until the point when he was in trial. And when he was in the courtroom and had to sit there, why this judge was so outrageous in this case, I didn't know which judge it was, but this judge says you can't really ask the jurors what their political views are. So they can hate Trump and you can be on that. And he's very, I mean, you pointed it out, if he's given money to Biden in 2020 and his daughter got a big uptick in her political consultancy when people found out that she was the daughter of the biased judge. Anybody who was sane would have thrown him out in 2 seconds. And I think it will be on appeal, not at the state level, but when it gets up to the federal district or maybe the Supreme Court. But the actual idea that he's in there in court, that could hurt him. It can hurt him financially. It can hurt him on the campaign trail. He's not places where he should be right now. And it also says, you've got a lot of rhinos, you've got a lot of independents, you've got a lot of people who hate Biden's record, and they're saying, I don't like Donald Trump, but I want a record, I want a reason to vote for him. And then they go talk to their friends. Biden was a disaster on the border, on crime, on energy, on foreign policy. He can't even finish a sentence. But Donald Trump's in jail. He's in court. I can't do that. I can't vote for a guy who's a felon. That there's those types of people.
Yeah.
So how does he combat that? He's got to do two things, and he's doing it brilliant. I give him credit. He's got to get for the 100 million, excuse me, the billion, the 1,000 million that he's going to have to spend on legal fees and fines. He's got to get a lot of free publicity like he did in 2016. And he's doing it as a showman, and those split screen images are brilliant. And when you have him dripping wet and it's a wake for a tragically killed NYPD officer, and he goes all the trouble to go out to, and he is liked by people. And then the split screen shows Joe Biden with Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and these sleazy people that they're shaking down for $26 million, it's not a good, and they don't even care about to show up at the wake. And then you have the next split screen. He's at Chick-fil-A hugging a black African-American woman, and everybody's talking to him, and it's friendly, and he goes to the counter and wants to get milkshakes for everybody. And then you look at Robert, and then the next split screen image is the state dinner for the Japanese prime minister, and here is Robert De Niro, who's on record that he's going to beat Trump up, hit him. And he's got a girlfriend much younger than he is, and she's got one of these Oscar-style dresses that's very revealing. And then the paparazzi who are allowed in show a picture of Jeff Bezos' girlfriend. We've seen her, who's a little bit over the voluptuous stage, and she's crammed into this very slinky designer dress. She's a little bit too old to be a lot of work. And that's the type of people that are parading through the White House. Wow. He's at Chick-fil-A. And then the next is
the bodega.
Yes. So you got MSNBC, ABC, CBS, PBR, the NPR people. And they're saying things like, Donald Trump is like a wounded tiger. He's very dangerous. He's very dangerous. Did you see that? Or they're saying, did you see the look at his face? He's never had to endure this humiliation before. He's incapable of sitting for more than an hour. Now he's right where he'd never thought he would be. So they got all that stuff. And then he is out there in Harlem. The bodega's got a lot of Latinos, Puerto Ricans, black people, and they're chanting. And that all is fodder for campaign men. And he's getting publicity.
Yeah, they were chanting 4 more years.
And the left-wing media had to cover it because it was associated with a trial. So they've got, if anybody's listening on the Trump campaign, keep at it. Don't have shots of Donald Trump playing golf. Please have him in the inner city. Have him in East Palestine, Ohio. Have him with the working people. Have him trying to remind America why people hate him. They hate him because he's trying to redefine commonalities from race to class. He's saying to the black people of America of the inner city, I care more about your safety and your ability to buy gas and to buy food than does Oprah Winfrey or Don Lemon. And he's saying the same thing to the Latino people. All of those, you know, Michael Cardona and all these people in the administration, they don't care. I care more about you on the border than your Mexican-American elites do. They come out of Stanford and Harvard and they go to work for Dianne Feinstein or Barbara Boxer and they work their way up. And they don't care about you. And he's saying to the people of East Palestine, Ohio, Bill Gates doesn't like you. Jeff Bezos doesn't like you. Bill Clinton and Hillary don't like you. They call you deplorables. They call you chumps. They call you dregs. They call you irredeemables. They call you clingers. And so all of you people have more common with my agenda than you do with the self-appointed elites that claim that they represent you. And if he can do that, and that's to answer your poll question, I think that explains a little bit of the anomaly you were referring to, is that on the one hand, he's lost a couple of points in the national polls, so he's dead even. But when you look at the 9 swing states, with the exception of Pennsylvania, which is just dead even, he's got 2 or 3 points advantage in Arizona, maybe 4, Nevada, Georgia. He's doing well in North Carolina. He's doing well in Ohio. He's dead even or a little bit ahead in Wisconsin and Michigan. So why is that? And I think those are places where the increase in the Latino and black votes shows up more, in places like Atlanta, or the Latino vote in Nevada and Arizona, or the black vote in North Carolina, or in Michigan even.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure that he's going to win the popular vote, although he's got a good chance. I'm a lot more confident that he has a 2016 scenario in the swing states rather than a 2020 scenario. But then he could be like Reagan. Reagan, we were told, was crazy. He was too dangerous. They ran all those commercials. Jimmy Carter was dead even. Everybody thinks, Wow, Reagan blew Carter out. No, he didn't. They were almost dead even all through August. I think a poll 2 weeks before, Gallup poll, had them almost equal, and one of them had Carter ahead. And then people just collectively said, you know what? I can't take the TV screen anymore with that stupid, incompetent Carter, and he's totally unable to do anything about these Iranian hostages. Each day, heat levels an empty threat. And when he tried to free him, it was a disaster. Or, I can't take inflation. I don't want to hear about Amy anymore. I don't like these people. And they just, I'm done with him. And if Trump can, as I say, campaign in a populist fashion to the middle class and restrain himself and not say, you know, bird brain Haley and all that stuff, and just say, I am the candidate of normalcy. I will return you to normality. I am the candidate of moderation. These people are crazy. They are Jacobin revolutionaries. They want to destroy your border. They want to destroy the whole corpus of law in your city. They want you to pay $6, $7 for gas. They don't care about how much, you know, Zyrtec if you've got antihistamine problems, or they don't care about aspirin, or they don't care about your car insurance, or they don't care about buying a candy. They don't care about any of that. You're just collateral damage to these crazy utopians. If he can do that, he can win.
Yeah. Well, I think also that the Republican National Convention needs to do a lot in the swing states, and that I saw Elena Haba on a news program, and she was saying that the judge has made it so that Donald Trump has to be there on Monday and Friday when the normal thing is to have it Monday and Wednesday. So Donald Trump is free on Wednesday. So I think that anybody who's planning events, especially in the swing states of Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Nevada, should pay attention to Wednesdays, hump days. Donald Trump is free, and they should have their events at that time. So there's that. And then the other thing is Lara Trump at the head of the RNC needs to focus in those states on getting out the vote. And I know there's a lot of controversy with your listeners about mail-in ballots, but get the Republicans voting and voting early. And
I don't think there's any controversy. I think everybody who's listening.
Yeah.
I from what the people... I went to a Heritage event Tuesday in Santa Barbara, and I talked to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I gave a luncheon keynote, and I think, you know, Kevin Roberts, the head of Heritage, gosh, what a wonderful guy. He's really on ballot integrity. And the people I talked in the audience, I went last night to the Lincoln Club of Republican Lincoln Group dinner, joint dinner in Fresno, and everybody seems to say the same thing, is we don't like third-party ballot harvesting. We don't like post-election ballot curing. We don't like 70% of the people not showing an ID but voting by mail. We don't like automatic mailing ballots to people just because they show up at the DMV motor voter. We don't like 10 days that a ballot that's mailed in can still be counted after the election. We don't like the idea that if a ballot doesn't match the registered name on the registrar's list that can be cured after the fact. We don't like the idea they're even accepting ballots with improper names and addresses or missing signatures. But if that's the rules that they gave us, then we're not only going to play by them, we're going to beat them at it. We're going to beat them at it so much that we're going to get people elected. And then, and only then, when we have the power, we're going to go back to 70 to 75% people like they do in left beloved Europe and vote in presence in a human figure, in a material form, in a corporal existence on election day. So that name is going to be matched by a person, and that person is going to open their wallet or purse and show a driver's license or a passport, just like they do when they have to cast a check or get on a plane. And that's what we're going to do. But until we can do that, we're not going to sit here and play by the Marcus of Queensberry rules and see these people laugh at us as stupid clingers. We're not going to do it. We did that in 2020, and look, where'd it get us? So that's the attitude of the Republican Party, as I can see it.
Yeah. Well,
now,
good.
I'm not voicing my own views. It's just what people come up and say to me.
Yeah.
And they always say, do you think Trump can win? Do you think Trump can win? And before I can even answer, it says, I don't think they're going to be honest. I don't think they're going to be honest. I think I'm going to be sitting on election night, and I'm going to see Michigan and Wisconsin and Nevada, and Trump's ahead by 150,000 votes, and they've only got 5-10% left, and then all of a sudden, I'm going to go to the bathroom and come back, and it's all going to shrink.
Yeah.
And they're going to just take, whole sacks of mail-in ballots.
I have some encouraging news for those people that in Pennsylvania, the GOP is now getting out the vote early, encouraging mail-in and taking mail boxes or voter boxes out to areas that are right-leaning. So they are getting on the...
You know what they all should be doing? They should be hammering every day that they want to debate Joe Biden now, tomorrow, next week, as many possible debates. Do not do what they did last time. They had the first debate, and he listened to Rudy Giuliani and Chris Christie, who came in and said, rattle his cage. So here you have a demented 78-year-old that has natural empathy, and what do? You let him sleep for a week and let him have probably Adderall, and he gets in there in his Phantom of the Opera mode, and you're starting to yell and interrupt him, and you're giving him empathy, and he's tiring, and you're thinking, Trump, just calm down, be very polite. Let him speak, because he can't speak. The more that he talks and rambles, the more the contrast is that you're sober and judicious and calm and knowledgeable, and he's confused. But all you do is cut him off, and it's like he's drowning, and you throw him a life raft. And then the worst, Chris Christie got on television and started critiquing Donald Trump negatively. And you wanted to say, well, you were the guy that told him to do it. So at least have the intellectual integrity to say that you're going to criticize yourself. So then he did the opposite in the second debate. He was calm. He was knowledgeable. Biden started to fade in the last half hour. He won the debate. Did it matter? No. 60 million people have voted. And the same thing will happen now. So they haven't voted yet. But you look at the dates when they start voting, it's not that far away. And he should be trying to humiliate them and say, why doesn't he vote? Let's have a debate now. Let's have the debate the moment he's nominated, as quickly as possible. And they'll never do it.
No.
They'll either say no entirely if he's still the nominee, or they'll schedule a debate 3 days before the election when half of the electorate is already
voted. It won't matter, yeah. Well, Victor, let's go ahead and go to a break and then come back and talk about whether Joe Biden's uncle was eaten by cannibals. I can't say that with a straight face, but stay with us. We'll be back.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
The This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, we here at the podcast are fans of Hillsdale College, and I would like to take a minute to welcome our new sponsor, Hillsdale College. Did you know that Victor is one of the professors in three of the over 40 free online courses at Hillsdale College? That's right. The first, American Citizenship and Its Decline, is based on his book, The Dying Citizen, How Progressive Elites, Tribalism, and Globalization Are Destroying the Idea of America. The second is The Second World Wars, based on his book by the same name. And the third is Athens and Sparta, partly based on his book, A War Like No Other, How the Athenians and Spartans Fought the Peloponnesian War. These courses are 7 to 9 episodes long, and they are self-paced, so you can take them whenever and wherever, just as you can take the other 40 or more free online courses. Go right now to hillsdale.edu/VDH to start. It's free and it's easy to get started. That's hillsdale.edu/VDH to start. hillsdale.edu/VDH to start. And we welcome and thank our sponsor, Hillsdale College. So, Victor, recently Joe Biden's been telling stories again, and apparently his uncle was eaten by cannibals. I have some more serious questions about Joe Biden, but what did you think about that statement?
Well, there were incidents rare when people, like in PT boats or people who crash landed, supposedly encountered Native Americans, but JFK did in that general area, and they helped him. So in theory, there were cannibals. The Japanese reported that. But the problem was everything that he said was a lie, and everything he says almost daily is a lie. He said that his great uncle was flying a single engine. Well, he didn't say that. He was a single engine. Kind of flying like, you know, this kind of crashed in New Guinea. And crashed in New Guinea with a single engine aircraft. You know how he was. And there's cannibal.
And, you know, I don't, that was a good imitation.
You know, there's cannibal. Real thing. No kidding. All the truth. Real thing. Cannibal. And then later they, you know, found a piece of plane. Everything was a lie. He was in a two-engine aircraft. I think there were four crewmen. They were flying low, and from inexplicable reasons, the engine cut out. I don't think that the official report said they were attacked and shot down. They had mechanical failure, and they crashed into the Pacific Ocean, and only one person was saved. So unless he was talking about Amazon piranha fish or shark, that a big white cannibalistic shark came and ate him. I guess what I'm saying is that when Joe Biden's great uncle took off, or it was his uncle, I think, excuse me, when he took off, he didn't grow. Put it this way, he took off and he didn't drop an engine, and suddenly his two engine plane turned to one engine. And then number two, you can't say that the Pacific Ocean is the large island of New Guinea. And number three, you can't say that man-eating fish are cannibals. And number four, they never found parts of the plane among cannibals. So everything is the same thing as I was a semi-truck driver. I grew up with a Greek Orthodox people. I'm really Jewish. I've been in this synagogue more than anybody. I grew up Puerto Rican. I was a top football player, but, you know, Roger Staubach was my competition at the Naval Academy. It's all designed, you know, I slammed the guy's head down on a lunch counter when he insulted my daughter. I went down to the basement and got a guy to measure me off 6 feet of chain, and then I went out and stood down at Corn Pop. Hey, Corn Pop! That was really in thinly veiled racial terms, too.
Yeah.
And then he said, and then I had bright golden leg hairs, and black young kids looked at my golden bronze leg hairs and were, remember that? They wanted to stroke his leg. Yeah. Ultimately, with Joe Biden, if you let him talk long enough, he will mention his leg hairs are being stroked. He will mention that he has a picture of his wife in a hot bikini. He will let you say that he walked naked among Secret Service agents in his pool. You name it. Ultimately, something comes out like that of Turkey gobbling a girl's neck on the tarmac in Finland, or blowing on a young woman's hair, or having a woman file a complaint that he violates her space. There's something kinky about that entire family, whether it's the shower incident or the selfies of Hunter Biden's phallus or the brother who takes pictures of himself naked and they end up on a gay porn site. So the diary that he takes showers too long or at an age where it's inappropriate with his own daughter. The whole bunch of them are weird.
Well, let's turn to more serious matters of things Biden. And he's currently, Biden's got a loan cancellation, according to the New York Post, that will cost the taxpayers $559 billion, and it will benefit households earning $300,000 or more. And that's buying votes. And the other thing he's buying votes, he went to Pennsylvania to talk to union workers and the steel mills and made promises of raising tariffs on the Chinese steel coming in. And I was wondering, is there anything else to say about this buying votes?
Well, as a general rule, any politician that at some point in his last year of his tenure starts to advocate positions or gives promises that he didn't do in the first 3.5 years, then he's buying votes. So if he really believed that about tariffs, he would have done it earlier, right? So his program is basically based on 4 or 5 principles to get elected. With the qualifier, he doesn't want to run on what he did. He doesn't want to run on the border. He doesn't want to run on the dropping crime statistics. He doesn't want to run the deflation's no problem. He doesn't want to run on the beautiful State Department portfolio. He doesn't want to run on energy, all of that. What he wants to run on is what you said, buying votes, and they fall into 4 or 5 general categories. So he wants gasoline down. Suddenly gasoline is not stinky and gooey and awful, and we have to outlaw it in 10 years. And the Saudis are not pariahs. And the Iranians got to be, you know, don't attack. No, these are oil producers. And he wants them to produce as much oil as possible. And he wants to do his part. And what is his part? It's to don't put one drop into that damn reserve, but drain it. And he's drained it pretty much all he can without being, you know, just a joke, but he's not going to put oil in it before the election, and he's going to green light federal leasing. He's not publicly, but privately, and he's going to tell the Ukrainians, do not touch one Russian oil facility. He's not going to say, as he did the first 3 years, I put the toughest sanctions on the Russians ever, and I stopped their oil. And he's going to, you know, he lift his sanctions on the Iranian oil, so he wants as much oil from illiberal regimes, even if he can, because he wants people to pay cheap gas. And then think, Joe Biden lowered the price of gas. And then he's going to say to the Federal Reserve, these interest rates got to go home. He doesn't care about the inflation because it's always 2 or 3 or 4 months after they lower. He wants those interest mortgage rates down so he can say he's got a big GDP and people can afford a home before the election. And then when we get back to 9% inflation, he doesn't care because he's got 4 years. He can't touch him. And then he's going to, in addition to the federal, he's going to cancel, you know, student loans. He's already started. And here's a person who every single moment says that Donald Trump is a danger to democracy and is an insurrectionist. And he looks at the nation and he says, we'll get away and get around to the Supreme Court. In other words, illegally, I'm going to challenge the authority of the highest court in the nation. And when they say it's illegal for the executive branch to interfere in a federal contract and just arbitrarily cancel it, I don't care. I'm going to give all. And you know what? Everybody says, well, that's a really stupid thing because, you know, I hear all these conservatives say to me, that's a really stupid thing because it makes him look really, you know, dishonest, and he's breaking the law, and he preaches, so he's hypocritical about you have to show, you know, observance of every federal law. They're sanctified. No, that's not hurting him. And then I say, nobody's going to fall for that, Victor. Nobody's going to say, you know, I owe $15,000 and Joe Biden canceled my loan. I'm going to vote. Yes, they will. And number two, three, they say, you know, it's really going to hurt him with the working class because half the people don't go to college. So if you're a welder in Pennsylvania and you're working since you're 18 and some snotty-nosed little elite you see on TV has barricaded himself into the University of Pittsburgh library yelling Genocide Joe and death to America, and you have to pay for that? No. They're too busy welding and working and having a regular life. So it's going to help him, and the oil will help him. And getting the interest rates down will help him. So he is in the middle of a massive campaign to buy votes in all of these different areas. And he didn't do it the first 3 years, except for the midterms. He did a little bit right before the midterms with the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and the first round of illegal loan forgiveness. So he's off into the races, and he's going to give a lot of stuff free. And he doesn't care about borrowing $1 trillion every 100 days. Every 100 days.
That's so crazy. Well, Victor, we're at the end of the show. And I have one. I came across on your website a comment that said, I'm never listening to this podcast again because Sammy is stupid and she is... He implied, these are my words, rooting for the other side, not Trump, because she voiced the doubts about the mail-in, getting out the vote, et cetera, that the GOP can actually do that. But I just want to say that I'm the foil. And so I was just raising the doubts so that we can get that information out to our GOP so that they might be more, you know, as active as they can be to take part in the voting process as it is available to us. So well, I apologize to any other listener that felt that way.
Sammy, you're in the arena. When you climb down out of the stands and you're in the arena and you're gladiator, and even if you've done a good job, they'll still put the thumb down.
I know. But
you voted for Trump. You're fanatic Trump support. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, and but I just want to be sure.
Letters. You have to have your own angry. I'm not going to let you hijack my show and have Sammy's angry reader moment. I do that on my own website. And I give points. I have points for all capitalization, swear words, no punctuation, misspelled words.
Yeah.
And usually it's no evidence at all, but I don't know. A lot of people, we read them, and some of them are, we have had some recent letters will say, you know, you need to keep up with the tempo and you're a day or two behind and you should do it every day. And I'm thinking, wow, I write 3 ultras a week. So that's 2,100 words. I write a syndicated column, that's 750, and I write a 2,000-word American Greatness, so that's 5 days a week. If I take one day off, I'm behind, and then we do 5 hours of podcasting a week.
Yeah.
I have a full-time job at Hoover. I know people are saying, don't whine, Victor. I drive a truck for 12 hours. Yeah, I've got a lot easier than you. I didn't say I didn't, but...
Yeah, here's to all those truck drivers out there. We enjoy you guys.
I enjoy you guys. I even forgive you when I'm in the left lane and you look around and see if there's a highway patrol on. When there's 3 lanes and you just zoom from the middle to the left and then you go about 90 miles an hour and then you zoom back to the middle when you see a cop.
Especially at traffic hour.
And I'm still your friend, even when sometimes I'm going 75 in the left and I turn, look in the rearview mirror and there's 70,000 pounds of 1 foot from my bumper.
Well, Victor, we have listener comments, and since we're on to the critics at the end of this show, I'm going to read part of one that was critical of you, and I don't think it's critical, though. He says this. He says, it's become unlistenable, the podcast. He goes, every episode now, it seems like it's about Israel, Israel, Israel. It's all VDH talks about, and his rambling apology is on Israel's behalf are obsequious, unconvincing, and downright embarrassing. It degenerated to the Hannity level stuff, really. And I was like, that sounds like a good level to me. I don't know about you, but
we talked about voting laws. We talked about Joe Biden's cannibalism. We talked about the contours of the 2024 election. The only reason we talked about Israel today is that we hadn't talked about
the bombing, right?
The bombing and what they're going to do about it. But I would say to the listener, there is a difference between the only constitutional state in a area of 23 countries who on October 7th was not... What were they doing that was wrong on October 7th? Gaza had been autonomous in 2005. And if people, and the Palestinian Authority had virtual autonomy, and 21% of the residents of Israel are Arabs, and they don't seem to want to go to Gaza. So it's a no-brainer. And I would say to the listener, if you go to Gaza, as I have, if you go to Jericho in the West Bank, as I have, if you go to Damascus, as I have, if you go to Beirut, I have, if you go to Algeria, Morocco, try to go to Libya. I suggest you go to Cairo. Go to all those places and then go to Israel and see if there's a difference. And there is a difference.
Yeah, of
course. What you just wrote to me about Israel... If you were in Egypt and wrote that, you'd be in big trouble. And that's a very moderate, advanced country compared to Syria. In Syria, you'd be dead. If you wrote that in Israel, substituted Israelis for me, they wouldn't care. I don't care what you wrote. But if I was a Jordanian bureaucrat, you'd be in big trouble. So it's a real people can't see that difference.
Yeah, I know that.
And I'm not doing it out of tribal concerns. I mean, I had a very unique, I don't mean unique as good or bad, or I was brought up on a very isolated farm where I am now. I literally never met someone I knew was Jewish till I went to college. Looking back, I realized that there was a couple, very nice family in Fresno that were good friends of my parents, and they were Jewish. I didn't even know it. But when I went to UC Santa Cruz for the first time, people said they were Jewish or people said something, and I didn't know. And that's what rural life was about. So I'm not some hyper-Zionist or something. I'm not doing this because I don't support Israel because I'm doing it to promote Jewish chauvinism or Zionism. I'm doing it empirically because I look at the society. I've seen it. I've gone to other societies, and I know there is a difference, and that Israel resembles more than any other country, I think, the United States. Go to Haifa, go to Tel Aviv, go to the United States. It's different even than going to, you know, from Berlin or Paris. So that's all. Okay. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. Well, we're at the end of the show, so thank you, and thanks to our listeners.
Thank you, everyone.
This is Sammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson, and we're signing off.